G'day and welcome everyone. Welcome back to the Luke's Lowdown podcast. I'm super excited to have you all back to the first series of 2020, the Lessons from Lockdown series. And I've got a bunch of varied guests coming on throughout this series. And I thought about who can I interview, where do they live, and what experiences have they all had? And I wanted them to be unique and different and very individual. So I've tried to gather together a bunch of people where we can all learn from these individuals and what they've been through during this lockdown phase. And I thought this was a really cool idea because we've all had our own experiences. We've all had our own ups and we've all had our own downs. And I want everyone to start looking within to understand what they've learned from this period of slowing down during the COVID-19 crisis that we've all been living through and living through still. So this series of the Luke's Lowdown podcast is all about the lessons from lockdown. And I'm super excited to share it with you. It is 10 episodes long and they'll be released every week. And I'm here with you today, episode one, with a very good friend of mine. And if you are a follower of myself and have watched the Ultimate Triathlon on Amazon Prime, read Chasing Extreme, which is also available on Amazon and Audible, you may just well know the man who I'm talking to today. His name is Kevin Bliss, but AKA, we all know him, we all love him as the main man, Disaster. How are you, brother?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to talk to you, mate. And yes, people may know you as Disaster or Kevin from the Ultimate Triathlon, who came out and cycled with me for the few final days. And also, you do get quite a few mentions in Chasing Extreme as well. Where are you these days? Tell us where you are.
When COVID hit, we were in New York City, and now I'm in Woodstock, New York, which is about 100 miles north, just on the edge of the Catskills, just 100 miles north in New York State.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you were literally right in the city when COVID hit, and you and your lovely wife, Erica, decided to, right, let's get out of the city and into some countryside. Talk us through why you went up there initially.
Yeah, it was just my boss said office was closed, so we have no kids, but we have two dogs, and pretty humble place, but just some space, you know. So we have 5 acres and there's some good nature trails, and the weather was pretty crap then, so yeah, it's just a good place to try and get away. And then, you know, just given what was going on, and it was kind of like the building of that kind of period of time was, it was kind of, people didn't know what was going on. So it wasn't anything out of fear or thinking about the city necessarily. It was just, that's where we go when we have time, you know, downtime. Mm-hmm. We knew it was going to be at least a month. So when we were let go, you know, we were talking about, oh, let's circle back at the end of April and we'll reassess, so anyway, that was kind of the mindset coming up here.
Yeah. And as you said, you go up there when you do have time to go and chill out and enjoy the open space up there. So obviously you're still working virtually. What were your days like when you first went up there? Because I'm guessing when you normally go up to the place where you are now, you're not working, you're chilling out, you're having a bit of a vacation, you have a few days to unwind from living in New York City. So What was your daily sort of living and working activities when you first went up there?
Yeah, it was a lot of eating, actually. It's like the kitchen's always there, always available, and there's always food in the house as opposed to New York City where you're always doing takeout. So so definitely a lot of eating. Again, it was quite cold. So we were doing some snowy walks, some good nature trails in the morning. So we were pretty adamant about getting out of the house because we can open up the back door and the dogs have a good run out the back. But it's always nice to just get out there. So we go and do this 2-mile nature trail that's pretty protected. So even if it gets a good downpour of snow or anything, we're pretty good. Yes, we do that every morning. And then I was making, I'm not a coffee drinker. It's kind of, you know, into my, getting into like my chai teas and some mushroom stuff and reading about that. And yeah, and then Erica's, we're about 90% plant-based. And so we're eating quite well. We went for a big shop and had a lot of groceries on hand and making some really good meals. So yeah, it was literally about the food, probably a little too much alcohol, like the beer started pretty early, because when you're up there, it's a pretty, like you said, it's a relaxed atmosphere. And, you know, it's not uncommon just to crack a beer at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, even though I had a few more hours of work. So that was, we had to get out of that habit. And once the weather broke, that kind of helped. But yeah, so I'd say it was, yeah, we got into a routine. We were working. We didn't really have the space to separate. So now I'm in the second bedroom, but we didn't want to use that. And just for, we didn't have a desk and things like that. So anyway, we kind of just cohabitated out near the fireplace. Yeah, we were like, if I was on a conference call, she would leave, try to keep the dogs quiet. It was, everyone was really understanding at the time about, you know, people walking through your screen and dogs and stuff. But it was actually more hours worked than I had worked the previous 6 months, because you didn't really have an excuse. I'm at a startup, and so we just, a lot of us just focused on work. So it was crazy. It was we were logging probably, you know, I was easily logging, you know, 11, 12 hour days.
It's actually one of the things that, talking to my friends, people found themselves in two baskets, either doing, being more productive with doing less hours, because they found that they're just getting their projects done, they're getting their work done, and then if that's all they need to do for that day, they're signing off, and they're actually spending more time on themselves because they don't have to commute. Say people in London, they don't have to commute, or even like you in New York City, you don't have to commute. So you're actually being more productive because you're actually in the office at home and you're getting the work done. But then there's this other side of people, and it sounds like you've definitely fallen into that, where they're working more because you literally can wake up, roll out of bed, turn the laptop on, and you start work. And you sort of maybe stop for maybe 10, 15 minutes, get some food, come back and keep working while you're eating, and keep working, working, working until like, oh, I've got to have some more food. All of a sudden it's dinner time, you know, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock. Holy crap, yeah. I've been working since 7. I haven't really stopped. So I've definitely seen that. And I think it's been an occurrence where there's two people where they've actually, two types of people where they've actually enjoyed the freedom of not having to commute or, you know, drive anywhere or whatever. And they've actually taken that time to enjoy it for themselves. And then they've been more productive. Whereas the other people, I'm not saying productive or not, but other people, and it sounds like this is what you've been through, is actually just like, I don't have a commute. So there's an extra hour, 45 minutes, half an hour, hour and a half, whatever it is, where I can do more work. Are you still in that mindset? Are you still throughout the guys in the startup working like that, or have you addressed it?
We started signing off, right? So we started saying, hey, you started noticing. I think the thing that we recognize that we had to over communicate. So in the beginning it was like, I'm going to the toilet. Like, cause you just didn't want to ping someone and not have someone respond. Cause you were just worried about, in the beginning you're worried about, I've never really worked remotely. So you're just worried about like being accountable and being there. And we're a really relaxed atmosphere. So it's not, has nothing to do with the structure of our company or anything. But you're just expected to be on. And so in the beginning it was a lot of over communicating. And now we've found the balance between like being off for 15, 20 minutes, hey, I got to walk the pooch, stuff like that. But I find people now have kind of started saying like, hey, you know, evening walk, going out with my wife and kids, you know, so it's kind of people are signing off, you know, hit me up later if anybody needs anything type thing. So yeah, I'd say now we're finishing at like a more of a reasonable time around 6, you know, as opposed to just like, like you said, letting it spiral into 8. I mean, the thing was, we were all still on. So that was like, we were all in the same camp because you had nothing else to do, right? Like, you know, I'd pause for, we were fortunate enough, we had a Governor Cuomo, was kind of our only our only guidance here in the States. And I'm not a huge fan of Cuomo before this, but he was a great communicator and was able to at least be transparent through the process and tell us what he knew and what he didn't know. And so being a resident of New York State, the whole country was actually watching Cuomo. So that would come on and I would take like an hour or whatever and watch a good portion of that. That was kind of like our daily thing. And I would make sure I stepped off for lunch. And then finding that time for no commute, I was doing a little bit of training, probably not that much just because we'll maybe get into it, but just we weren't feeling that great the first few weeks and we were kind of recovering. But then I did find my meditation practice again.
Where did you find that? Where was it hiding?
It was in my app. It was in my phone. I do like the 10% happier thing. I actually find that I kind of like the structure around it. I know people have different opinions about it, but so I got into that. So I would just get up. I'm a pretty early riser anyway, and I would just get up an extra 15, 20 minutes early and just kind of go sit, and usually had a furry dog next to me, and just kind of, again, it was quite cold in the morning, so it was kind of cool, and just kind of sit and do that. And then as I progressed and things started to open up and clear up, I found I didn't need it as much. You know, I probably do need it, but I do think that definitely helped me for the first month to kind of just, you know, process everything and just be more diligent about not being reactive to certain things. And so, yeah, so I think that was a pretty good tool to kind of be able to go into the basket and at least, again, I'm a crap meditator, but it was good to at least know that I had that was an outlet. And so I was able to tap into that.
Yeah. I think in this period of time where we're forced to be in this situation, right? And not reacting is difficult because we're being told by the world that we have to stay at home, we're in lockdown, we can't go out, and we know it consciously. It's not like, oh well, no, I don't understand why we're not being able to do this. We can understand it consciously, and to then have the ability to almost stay neutral, right? And it sounds like the meditation for you has helped you to, you know, not actually go down a negative rabbit hole, and that just stay neutral. It may not have taken you all the way to being positive, but allowed you to create that space to then not react and then have that negative thought or do those negative actions, so to speak, and keep you on the straight and narrow. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Because I know you. I've known you for many years now, and you are a bit of like, oh, what's that shiny thing over there? Oh, look at that over there. Let's do that. So, yeah. And I mean that with love, mate. But so I think for you being able to slow down, to just actually give yourself, to create that space to make the decisions that are going to help you achieve the most out of your day, because that's where it starts, right?
Yeah. And I think it's the same feeling I get from a long run. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of like you kind of wear yourself down and get your thoughts out. And then when you're done, I actually feel when I have a good meditation session, I feel like I've just gone on a nice jog, and we weren't able to jog. Like the weather was just real crap. And wasn't at full strength. So I just wasn't trying to push it. And so that was a good, really good alternative. And I had never relied on it as that. I always tried to just do it because I knew it was good for me. And this time it was like, I actually sought it out, so like it served its purpose, and yeah, I will get back to it. Yeah, I will get back to it. I get emailed every day, like, where have you been?
So you mentioned there that you and Erica, your wife, didn't feel great. Tell us about the experience. You both have had the virus, and I thought having you as the first guest of the Lessons from Lockdown, I may as well chat to someone who has actually had the virus. Tell us a bit about your experience.
Yeah, first, no drama at all with our situation, but this thing's a bastard, right? So like this thing is it's really fickle. Like it definitely, like my wife Erica, but she put it really well. She said it just tests you every day, and it would do something different every day, and it kind of makes sense as to why it's so deadly. you know, or like just trying to find your weakness. And so whether it's, you know, again, underlying condition, it's like the variety of underlying conditions was vast. So it literally finds a weak spot. And she felt it in her neck. She felt it like she wasn't running a really high temperature. So it was kind of masking itself as something else. She wasn't sniffling or feeling nauseous or like anything like a flu. And everyone knows some of the symptoms, but I mean, she, you know, the shortness of breath thing was only for a day, literally 24 hours. And she'd wake up and I go, what do we got today? And it was like, oh, my, you know, my back hurts, or like, it was just literally probing all these different areas. And so we didn't recognize it as COVID at first. We said, you know, it might be likely, but she's a healthy, you know, healthy individual and we're good to go. And we just didn't want to subject ourselves. We felt it was worse to go to the hospitals and there was people, you know, really ill. And so we just did what we did. And I was probably a week after. And so the real trigger that we knew was, as we discussed earlier, was loss of sense of smell and taste. And that had just been discovered, that was a pretty clear signal that's it's COVID. So then once Erica lost, she was making some great meals. And once she was over, she always over salts, but in a good way. I love her cooking. She was really like, couldn't taste the flavors and things. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this tastes amazing. And then a few days later, I lost my sense of smell and taste. And so we were both sitting there like pouring hot sauce on our tongues and trying to figure that out, like as you would, right? So I think in that time, we recognized she wasn't feeling well. She was eating really well. You know, we were taking it easy. In the middle of not feeling well, I had like this day where I felt amazing. So I went out for this awesome jog. I was just like, this is awesome. And I'm not really like the, you film myself while I run guy, but I think I was actually delusional. I actually think I went out there and like, I hadn't run in a little while and I was out there and I felt amazing. And I started filming myself and I was talking to the camera and I was like, never even do this. I've never published it or anything. I never showed anybody. I actually found it the other day and I was like, what was I thinking? And then I was scattered for like 3 days after.
Yeah,
I dial it back, and that I was still fighting something. So I think it was just, look, no kids. Our ability, you know, we already have a reasonably healthy lifestyle. A lot of yoga, so we have a cool little yoga room. And then we were just doing that through video. A lot of teachers had hopped on the Zoom and stuff. And so Erica has a really good yoga community. So I was just kind of like the guy in the background, like the awkward guy, trying to not be seen. So we were fortunate enough to like have the tools in place and have the space and have all that to be able to do the self-care that we felt was necessary.
How long did the flight for you, how long did the no taste and smell last?
So Erica just, I would say like it was at least a week and a half where it was, the smell was gone, like the smell and taste were absolutely gone. Then the smell, you know, we were cutting onions and like Erica's a big crier when she cuts onions, she has onion goggles and stuff. And she was cutting an onion like nothing, like she could have just popped it in her mouth, like whatever, like there was nothing going on. So it was that extreme. And then just started to get it back like mid April. And so it was probably like early April. And then I was saying Erica's probably back, but I'm still putting a lot of hot sauces and jalapenos on like random dishes just to kind of get some more flavor. And I've never been a spicy guy or like a hot guy, but I don't think mine's back currently.
Like, and that's like three months basically.
Yeah, I was early, yeah, late March for my sickness. Erica was like mid-March. Yeah, so it'd be interesting if it ever comes back, but now I can eat anything. It's kind of
so I don't want to just glaze over that, you, the fact that you're putting like hot sauce on your tongue. And did you say you were eating raw onions as well?
I did the raw onion thing. We also we also took like our worst bottle of scotch and just, you know, kind of did some mouth, like, you know, can you taste this, because it's like the most potent stuff we had. And it's not the best scotch, so I was like, we may as well waste it doing this. And we literally was swishing it around in our mouth like mouthwash, and it was like nothing.
Nothing.
Could have been water.
That's crazy.
Weird to be, you know, like when you get sick and you lose your sense of smell, it's usually because you're stuffed up. But this was just nothing. And so, yeah,
did you still feel the texture?
Yeah, everything else is fine. Everything, like, and you could tell the food was good. I mean, these were meals. These are like Erica's like go-to meals that she had shopped for. We did a big shop before we quarantined, and I was so excited for all these meals that just, I was like, I know what this is supposed to taste like. Yeah.
Love it. So you can't taste anything. You can't smell anything. You're going out. You feel like quite flat, not a lot of energy. And then you think, oh, I'm okay. And you go out like a random day, and you're obviously still delusional. How long did that sort of exhaustion feeling last on top of the lack of taste and smell?
Yeah, it was probably a month. Yeah, it's probably a solid 3 to 4 weeks, I would say. And there was definitely days where you were just ready to go, and then you just had to keep it dialed back.
Yeah.
And so every once in a while I was doing some, like, my other thing was get on the turbo and do like a couple of Netflix shows and just try to go. But at first it would be easy, and then I'd be like, oh, I feel good, and I would hit it. And then it was always just that negative effect at the end, which is fine. You could push yourself a little bit and test yourself, but it ended up being you realized that we weren't in the best place, so that you had to kind of take us. Yeah, it was better just to be cautious. I did run because they canceled the Boston Marathon. Was like one of the bigger majors to go, or I guess Tokyo was in February. They actually had canceled that. But in terms of like over on this side of the world, Boston being, is it London the week after?
Yeah, something like that.
Canceled those two. And so for Marathon Monday, which is a big deal, I actually went out. That was kind of my turning point. I went out and ran a marathon in the morning before work. So I got up at like 4 a.m. and it was super slow and steady. And I found a rail trail, so it was super flat. So I knew I could do it. I hadn't put in that many miles up to that point, but I had trained pretty hard up until getting sick. But so that was kind of when I knew the weathers had started to turn, and that was when we both started feeling much better. So there was no ill effects of that. And that was, I think it was, the marathon was going to be late this year. So it was pretty late April.
So you've had the virus, and you've had been exhausted and all of that lack of taste and smell, but still, you know, working, as we touched on at the start of it, still working long hours when you were, you know, exhausted and tired and not feeling right. Like, what was the toughest thing through that period that you had to deal with, and how did you deal with it?
It's a good question. I think we're a small group of individuals trying to move things forward. And so, I was super impressed by how quick, they're a little bit younger than me. And they just adapt so quickly. And so like our sales team became virtual really easily, like really well. Like normally they're trying to meet with people and flying places, and they just did a great job of getting in front of prospects. And then we actually had a full kickoff. There was no rest because late March was the start of an implementation of the reason why I got hired. So it was this huge organization that we're implementing our software for, and I'm the head of the project. And so I was, you know, wrapped in a blanket, kind of like shivering right before the Zoom call, and then I'd have to like strip it off and just kind of fake through it. And then, yeah, I mean, it was, again, not to be dramatic, but it was, you just had to do what you had to do. And then, but then you're like, cut. And then you literally just, the video goes off and you put the blanket on and put the Scully back on. So yeah, there was some of that. I had to kind of fake through some of it. But again, there was just nothing else to focus on, right? So like your time, think about like life, like your time is always, you know, you gotta go, you wanna go see your family, or you wanna go travel. Like, there's just no downtime. Like there was just, you could focus on work, right? Like you, like the 12 hours felt like nothing because you weren't doing the grind. And then I was fortunate enough to work with people that were, you know, in the same boat. So we were good about not just plowing into work. So our boss is quite good about, like, we do a morning stand up and we would talk about life and we talk about what's going on. So I had a really thoughtful team. And that wouldn't have been the case in my prior life. It would have been more like matter of fact business just because we were such a large organization, but being in the small organization, you know, we had our owner, he's Danish and he was super caring and hopping on calls and just, you know, really like really good management through that process. So that definitely helped. So I could see not having that kind of support makes the work, would make the work feel, difficult, but this was actually a really good environment for that.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, the yourself adjusted to what needed to be done. And so did the company that you work with, sort of just like, okay, this is a scenario that we're living in. So how can we make it most efficient? Which is really cool to see, actually, because I think a lot of other companies, although you guys are relatively new and small, but I think a lot of companies are just like, well, we need to get so much done. How can we do it? And what happens to the people who are trying to do the work afterwards is a secondary thought. So that was really cool to hear as well. So, you know, with you having to, you know, drag yourself through some of the Zoom calls when you're feeling like death warmed up, you know, definitely as you're an endurance athlete, you're a marathon runner, Ironman, ultra marathon runner and all the rest of it, you've had to push yourself through some tough times athletically. Is there any sort of internal language that you use, like when you've got this Zoom call coming up and you just feel horrible, but you know you've got to fake it to, you know, to perform? Do you have any sort of like internal dialogue that you have to yourself before you've got to do stuff like that, that maybe you have learned from sports or in any other areas of life?
The internal part, I actually think it was about practice and repetition. So I tend to be relaxed enough to hop on a call in front of a number of people to kind of walk through a presentation. Whereas in this case, I knew I needed to be like spot on, right? So I had notes on walls and post-its that no one could see, you know, so I had it like above the screen and but there was a lot of prep. So less internal, it was actually practice. It was actually take the time and sit down and don't try to just get by. It was actually like, you know, you're not at your best. So use all the tools at your disposal and just recognize that you're not at your best. So yeah, so there was actually a lot of prep going into that like kickoff implementation call. I was probably ended up being less myself and a little more robotic just to kind of get through it, but that was the downside. That was a downside. No one knew who I was anyway. So I figured at least I'd get the, you know, the communication right.
Train hard, race easy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good one. I like that. And then look, it's a balance. I believe in the self-care thing, you know, like, you know, work hard and then take care of yourself. Internally, I need the external, you know, sometimes I need external, like some of these virtual races we talked about, like I need to attach that the marathon I ran, I forgot to mention, was for charity. So thinking about, you know, putting things in perspective helped. So I actually work for a soup kitchen in New York City where we do meals on Monday nights and we're serving nearly 500 people that would come in and we do table service. And Eric is a server and I do the soup and but we do like serve the people directly. So it's like Meals with Dignity. And this program has been going on for 20 years and there was no replacement for them. So the government was trying to come in and trying to take over these programs to try to do help the assistance because they were subjecting the volunteers were being subjected to, you know, a pretty diverse group of people coming in with potentially sick, you know, illnesses and subjecting themselves to that. And so, but that had to go on. And so we were still serving, I think roughly 400, still roughly 400. We started making it to-go meals. So I did that a few times before we left, because that kind of hit in early March. And then we tried to do a big fundraiser in April, just because we knew we were going to spend a lot more money on packaging and stuff to get the meals to take out rather than to sit in where we have where we wash dishes and stuff. So anyway, there was some motivation around that, and that just puts it in. So the internal aspect is to remember, keep perspective. So I have this job. It's important. We're young. We have to keep going. But then, you know, I have a sister-in-law who's in Boston Hospital, which got hit pretty hard in the beginning. She wasn't on a COVID floor in the beginning. And then over the next 3 weeks, she ended up on a full COVID floor, you know? So then you just, you know, every week we did a good gratitude session as a company. And the guys in New York City were hanging out the windows doing the 7 o'clock shout out like they did in Spain and they did in the UK. And so they were doing that. So I got to live vicariously through that on video. We'd watch some of that. So again, it was kind of, once you put things in perspective, I feel like rubbish, but we're going to get through this. And I'm also, my job's not going to kill me, right? So I'm not subjecting myself every day to volunteer. So it was kind of like that perspective and that, you know, being able to take a step back and just realizing how lucky we were to be in the position we were in, even though we're not feeling great. I think that was, as cheesy as that sounds, I think that was a good attitude to have.
No, it's not cheesy at all, mate. I think, you know, having a gratitude practice, which, you know, I would say that is like thinking about what you're grateful for every day, and part of that gratitude practice would be to put life into perspective and appreciate what you do have. And I think if more people actually spent the time to do that and started to do it over a longer period of time, I feel a lot of people would be more content and happy in their lives, and probably start shifting even their behaviors to understanding what is important in their daily life. So then what they're actually doing in that day, and then over the coming weeks. And I think, mate, it's awesome to hear that. And it's really cool that you've been able to have those experiences and put life into perspective during this period where a lot of people were worried about the fact that, oh, I can't go to the pub and have a beer, or I can't go and get my hair cut and whatever. And it's like, well, you know, you've had a family member who's working in a hospital, and you're thinking, well, at least my job won't kill me, you know? And I think that's an awesome way to think, but initially the majority of people in the world thought like that. And hopefully, I believe that people started to throughout the COVID experience for everyone, but it sounded like you were pretty much like that from the get-go. And mate, I think that's really cool. So on top of that, what has being in lockdown and your own personal experience in lockdown taught you about yourself?
I think it was that I have the tools to get through anything, you know. So I didn't think of them as tools up until this point, until we started kind of thinking about this conversation, or I started thinking about this conversation. But when you take a step back and I think about, you know, my experience of just being like an idiot and going out and logging a bunch of miles because I think that's how I'm going to get through a marathon, and then realizing, oh, actually there's a smarter way to train for a marathon in like a steady state and changing up your weeks, and, you know, so just learning that structure, there's just so much to get from the physical side, translating that to the kind of structuring your life side. And just I feel like I was able to tap into a lot of those types of that kind of framework that's been built in. And again, I'm fortunate enough to have such a strong partner who kind of led the way on the food side of, you know, I've been plant-based since 2016, fully plant and pretty much plant-based since then. And then my wife's been vegetarian since 2010. And then, you know, so she's always been kind of leading 5-6 years ahead of me. She's been doing a great yoga practice for forever. And it just takes, I'm just a stubborn old guy that just kind of takes some time to come around. And, but then once I looked at like what I could do for myself and what was available, there was just a lot of positive avenues to be able to kind of go those routes that were supportive of what I'm doing. I do have to, like anybody else, I was probably drinking a little bit too much, like I might have said earlier, but then recognizing that, right? Like if you have it, if I knew I was having a few too many beers every night, just knowing that you're doing that is kind of half the battle.
Like, yeah, having an awareness.
Solve the issue. And can I, and then ask the question, can I not have the three beers? And then, that's a different, topic, so just recognizing, you're falling back onto habits and just recognizing that, you gotta be diligent. You gotta be resilient. And, I think sport has certainly been a good backdrop for that. So.
For sure, mate. I agree. I'm conscious of your time. So I'm gonna wrap it up here, mate. And I think you've definitely dropped some wisdom bombs, aka disaster style. Mate, it's been fantastic to talk to you about your experience during the COVID-19 lockdown. And it sounds like you've learnt plenty about yourself, plenty about how you want to live your life into the future as well, which is exciting as well. No doubt you will take on board what you've learned and implement that in your daily life, in your training life, and in your professional life as well. Mate, I just want to say I've got a lot of gratitude for you to taking the time to chat with me. And thanks very much, Disaster, for coming on the Luke's Lowdown podcast.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for continuing to get the message out on all things mindset. So keep at it.
Thanks, buddy. All right, everyone. I want to say welcome back and thank you for listening to the first episode of the Lessons from Lockdown series on the Luke's Lowdown podcast. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, remember to share it with all your friends, maybe tag a couple of people in a post that you think might be able to gain some insight into the conversations I'm having with some of the super cool guests that I've speaking with over this series, starting off with my main man, Disaster, who has definitely been dropping some knowledge bombs. I took away that gratitude is key, and I think you all can as well. All right, remember to keep smiling, stay happy, and I will speak with you all very soon on the second episode of the Luke's Lowdown podcast, Lessons from Lockdown.